music. Whoops, there's even some overdubbing there. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. We have a very important and serious show today. I always start by saying, oh, I'm so excited. We have such a, this is a great show and I am excited about it, but we're not messing around today. Because this, on June 15th, it is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. And since it is June 12th, if for those of you who are listening to a recording, it's a few days before that. And so we wanted to do a special show honoring this topic. And so we can dive into the intensity of elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation. It seems odd to be like, but we'll still have a light and airy show. But as always, but I am really excited. We have wonderful guests today to help us navigate through this topic. We have Kim Lassiter Fisher from the Orange County Department of Social Services and Kendall McMillan with the Orange County Department on Aging. I'm going to love on to those two in just a few minutes. But as always, looking forward to all we are going to learn together. But before we dive into our show, we want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM or stream us live through WCOMFM.org. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors and our expert guests on the show, like one of them I'm looking at right now, Kendall. Each week, Marilyn over at Orange County Department on Aging posts our past shows. And so if you want to catch up on any of our shows, and by the way, Alicia, we'll see if your microphone is working. Guess what? Today is our 80th show.
80.
So our past 79 shows are up on the website, and this one will be up soon. And so I know, right? And so you can go to the website either for our past shows or if you want to get a range of wonderful Orange County aging resources, the website is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. And if you have any questions about local resources, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging. And this is where I'm going to make Kendall give me weird looks because I give the main number, which is 919-968-2070. I'm sure during the show she will shout out the specific number for the aging helpline, but we like to use the main number, 919-968-2070, if you have any questions about local aging resources. And if you have any questions about our shows or want to suggest a topic or a person or an organization, continue to send me emails as our listeners have been doing. And my email is agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. That's smushed together, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. And a shout out to the Carrboro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quintet. For a while, we always called them the Quartet. Now they have a fifth person. I know Kendall was like, what? They have a fifth person. And so the Robert Bradford Quintet, you'll hear more of their music at the end of the show. And thank you for allowing us to use their original music. My fabulous co-host, Alicia, is across from me. She is playing with the technology. What's happening?
Heather.
The microphone's working. It's okay. The headphones. Yes. And at this point in the show, we don't really need the headphones. We're fine.
I'm just glad to be here with everyone. Hey.
Yeah, I know. And she's like, and Alicia's like, wait, there's people here I don't know. This is so fun. So Alicia, who is the quintessential Orange County community volunteer, Kim doesn't know this, at the end of the show, she'll be volunteering. Or I wouldn't be surprised if the groups, some of the groups you talk about, Alicia is already a part of. I mean,
what is it? I have so many personalities. I've got to put them all, place them all, you know.
I mean, my goodness. So Meals on Wheels,
hey,
Ombudsman.
Heather.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, let's get to Heather.
She's already She's also one of the extraordinary wellness instructors, and she is host of the show Right After Hours when we switch the place on the soundboard for Afternoon Talk with Alicia at 3 o'clock. Make sure to stay. And yes, me, I'm Heather Altman.
There we go.
Yay! I've spent over 25 years, and I realize I need to change that. Next year it'll be 30 years. I've spent almost 30 years working in aging services and supports. It's actually 40 years because I started at 14. I really did. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and as I just alluded to, at 54, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, we have great guests this week to turn to our really important topic. I am excited for the first time to welcome Kim Lassiter Fisher to the Aging Well Together show. Kim and I worked so closely together over 10 years ago. I was doing the math, right? I think it was over 10 years ago. We started in like 2008. That's almost 20 years ago. And then we haven't seen each other for so long. We haven't seen each other since I've had long brown hair and or, you know, shoulder length brown hair. And for folks who pay attention to the pictures, I've had short silver hair for 5 years. So we haven't seen each other.
She colored her hair that color, really.
I know. My silver hair. People do think I color, which is really funny. So we haven't seen each other, and I'm so excited. Kim is the Adult Services Supervisor over at the Orange County Department of Social Services. She is just, has always been someone I have turned to for lots of advice, and she's an amazing advocate in our community. And then, welcome, Kim, but then we get to turn to Kendall. Kendall, this is not your first time you've heard Kendall McMillan, who is the Aging Transitions Administrator with the Orange County Department on Aging, one of our returning expert guests and our sponsors. But this visit, and she's smiling, is her illustrious, I use this big word, I hope I'm using it right, illustrious fifth visit. It's her fifth appearance on the Aging Well Together show. Oh, wait. Hold on.
Look at that. Yay, Kendall.
Here, we'll do this one, too. We're playing with our fingers. Oh, wait, it goes on. Oh, well, that's the laughing. All right, we'll do another anyway. So this is, she is joining the Five Timers Club.
Yay.
And so her colleague, Marie Dagger, was the first one to join it. But Kendall is here. So first things first, we must celebrate her with the new tradition on the AWT show, which is she gets the I have it hidden, you guys.
Oh.
All right. You might hear sound. She gets the Fifth Timers orange scarf.
Where's that clap, Heather?
All right. Oh, wait. Oh, well, because I can't give it to her. I'm reaching across the thing. All right. Here's the clap again. And we'll make sure she opens it up.
Yay.
I was thinking it's wrapped in cellophane. Feel free to put the cellophane for sound effects into the microphone. Yeah. There we go.
We just lost about six listeners.
We're like ASMR here. And so when we take our picture at the end, we'll make sure she puts on the orange infinity scarf.
Perfect.
So, yes, we picked that. I know Saturday Night Live has the jackets, but we're doing scarves in orange because it's Orange County Department on Aging. Did you know about it? Did you see Marie Dagger's?
I saw Marie's, yes.
Were you thinking, I better get my orange scarf today? So you got it. So, Kendall, welcome back.
Welcome.
Kim, no pressure, but you have to come back at least four more times.
Wow. That is pressure.
That is pressure. I know, right?
That's pressure.
Okay. Seems weird, and it seems a little bit of a vibe shift, but we have a really important topic, and Kendall reached out a few months ago and said, hey, June 15th is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and we need to do a show on this topic. And so this is a conversation that we don't often talk about in the world. I mean, you do see sensationalized and true things on the media sometimes. You see a lot lately about fraud and scam. But I'm excited to turn it over. I'm going to ask Kendall and Kim. And what I don't know is there's actually a coalition in Orange County, or there's a work group that you two are working on. What is the name of that work group?
So we are the Orange County members of the Orange County Multidisciplinary Team. This is a collaboration of Orange County DSS and community partners to come together, to work together in a uniform fashion to try to prevent abuse, neglect, and exploitation, but also try to protect those individuals from that happening and to protect those individuals that has happened too. It is folks coming together to brainstorm, to bring ideas, to talk about the best way to have best practices, the best way to report, the best way to make sure that our community members are informed that contrary to belief that adult abuse does happen, mm-hmm. and it is something is required that you report. North Carolina is a mandatory reporting state, so anyone that witnesses an adult that is abused, a disabled adult, has an obligation statutory to report.
And any so of us, not just...
Yes, all of us, okay. all of us. And so our MDT team, part of our role is getting this word out, how we can work to prevent this from happening to adults. Because we don't want... We see it in the trenches. We see the trauma that it causes folks, and we don't want this to keep happening. Some of this is very intentional, but much of this is unintentional. So how do we educate folks so that they understand that if I push mom or if I'm screaming at mom and it causes her to cry, that that can be abuse. And so that's part of what our, you know, we look at, we talk about our missions and our values of this team moving forward. We have great community partners that include, of course, the Department of Aging, law enforcement, housing, partners like Freedom House, UNC mm-hmm. hospitals, multiple law enforcement agencies, including all of our local municipalities and the Metro Police Department. I'm sure I'm leaving other folks out.
Yeah, and so, and what's the name of the group?
Multidisciplinary team.
Mm-hmm. And so you all meet to talk about this issue and how you can all work together and support each other?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we're in the formative process right now. We have worked on developing our mission statement, our vision statement, mm-hmm. and our value statement. We've been working on that. But the goal certainly is to talk about how we support each other, but how do we come together to support the folks that we serve. Often the folks that we serve are seen by multiple entities. Kendall might see those folks. The police department might see those folks. We might see those folks. So how do we all come together, brainstorm on how to protect these vulnerable adults?
Okay. All right. This is...
That's a lot. Wow.
I know, right? This is helpful. And I have, as always, lots of questions, follow-up, also big picture contextual questions. So... I thought, well, we'd first, I'm going to take a few steps back, but big picture, World Elder Abuse Awareness Day mm-hmm. on June 15th. So I'll ask Kendall, what is the point of that literally as it says in the name? I mean, how did this come about to have a day and which we're turning into a week, which should be a month, to really talk about this issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is exactly as it is, as it's described, as a day for awareness. And I like what Kim said about, you know, bringing some more awareness, and that it's, you know, we have this kind of sensationalized what we see in TV shows of, mm-hmm. you know, this very extreme violence, which absolutely happens, and it's part of what we want to prevent. But there's also, you know, the smaller things that people are kind of on the fence of, like, you know, is this abuse? Yeah. Is this okay? Is this exploitation? Mm-hmm. You know, kind of not really sure. So bringing kind of some awareness to what this can look like and all the different facets that come with that.
Mm-hmm. My mind's already swirling because I heard of an interesting case yesterday that I might, in a meeting that I might bring up, you know me. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we have the day. And why am I thinking, isn't October, there's a day when we were like purple, there's a month where we were purple.
October is, and I know this from my previous life working in mm-hmm. domestic violence, is domestic violence awareness. Mm-hmm. So that includes elder abuse, but is, you
Got
know, all
it.
Types of.
Okay, because when I was thinking it's in June, mm-hmm. I'm like, isn't it October? And we were, and Kim, both of you, by the way, are wearing purple. Kim's wearing purple. And Kim,
so we planned it.
Oh my gosh, all three of you have purple on, so I know. Oh, and look, and Kendall.
You have a purple pen.
Yep.
Oh, wait. Oh, I have a purple pen. There. And this is
and
where it's
bag.
Always.
And your bag.
Oh, that's true.
And glasses.
And glasses.
You're, and your nails.
And your nails.
She's red.
Okay.
This is where
it's interesting. This is a radio show and not a TV show, because what you don't see is Kendall is, oh, yeah, by the way that all of us have some level of purple on, Kendall's wearing a pin that says Stop Elder Abuse. Mm-hmm. And, oh, wait, do you have it too, Kim? Oh, look at that.
So
okay.
Nice.
So...
We want one.
So part of when we're going to talk about this, and then in a moment I want to take a step back about adult protective services and how people report it, but we've kind of started to mention it, but what constitutes abuse and neglect? I mean, that's part of, and you've referred to it a little bit already, but part of it is just recognizing it, naming it, and like, hey, this behavior has crossed over. Mm-hmm. And I added the word exploitation. Is that okay, or is that okay?
And that is true, because it's actually part of our statutory obligation. And so we talk about maltreatment. And so we talk about maltreatment. There are three core areas. We talk about abuse, mm-hmm. neglect, and exploitation. And abuse itself is the willful infliction of pain or injury. Mm-hmm. It can be unreasonable confinement of a disabled adult.
Okay, so we're going to go slow just so we really get the willful, and I'll talk about that because sometimes there's, like, you don't mean it, but the willful harm.
Right. It is willful. And the tricky thing about abuse is it must be inflicted by a caregiver. And a caregiver is someone who has comprehensive day-to-day care of a person, either through a family relationship or through some type of contract, maybe through an agency, okay?
Okay.
So abuse can be a caregiver. It could be a son who takes care of his mother. I take care of my mother all the time. I help her with her bathing, her dressing. I fix her meals. I give her her medication. I take her all her doctor's appointments. I drive her around town. I make sure all her needs are met. So I'm a comprehensive caregiver. I got really upset with mom. And I pushed her, and she fell, and she broke her arm. That could be considered abuse.
Sure.
It wasn't necessarily something that the person meant to do, but under the statute, that could be considered abuse because he's the caregiver.
Well, and one of the things I will, and this won't get me in trouble, when I was a direct caregiver in the intensity of my mom, I sort of, and I say this very like jokingly and provocatively, but I'm like, if it wasn't me, I'd sue me. Because there was a lot of hands-on care, and I would notice both myself and my friend that was helping me out, sometimes there would be little bruises, like little on my mom. And from, you know, the constant...
The lifting,
the transferring, which was not easy, or even the blood pressure cuff sometimes would leave it. And so I was like, because of the medication, and I bruise really, really easily. And I was so, and everyone's like, oh, you're doing such an amazing job. You're doing great. And I'm like, but she's got some bruises on her. And then, I won't name it, but then she went to the hospital and she got so many bruises because it was a really complex transferring and all of the medical. And I thought, wow, I thought I was little bruises. So sometimes people just bruise really, easily. Really, my father bruises really, really
and
easily.
And people see it and think it's abuse. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's why I say jokingly, if it wasn't me, I'd sue me, because if I had walked into a place and saw some bruises, I'd say, well, what happened? But because I was the caregiver and I knew, but that was not willful, and
it was not intentional.
But it was
and
upsetting.
Oftentimes, if you have a parent that's on Coumadin or a Warfarin, that person
those blood thinners for our,
those are blood thinners, and that person could bruise very easily with just you trying to help them transfer.
Oh yeah, when I used to take a lot of Advil, I would bruise. Okay, so that's abuse. So that's the willful hurting, and then you were starting to go through. Then was it neglect or the next one?
Neglect. And so neglect has to talk about. There are two types of neglect. There is self neglect, and there is caretaker neglect. And self-neglect is when a person is unable to provide those essential things for themselves. And caretaker neglect is when you have a caretaker and that person is not providing those essential things for
you. Like not bathing, not taking him to the shower.
So it could be not getting you your medications, not taking your doctor's appointments. You might have a person whose nails are grown and they've come down into their skin. It might be that they've not combed their hair and their hair gets matted and their things of that nature. They might not take them to the dentist. They might not get medical care when the person gets sick. They might not be getting their insulin or getting their insulin levels checked.
You don't think about that. Wow.
I heard an interesting case. Okay, so this is where I'll mention the case. So, and I don't, you tell me what this falls under. It's either neglect or something. So I was on a Zoom call. This is in another state, but it's an attorney that's connected with, it's a little kind of, it's not quite Adult Protective Services, but it's an attorney that was called in from a gentleman, and his daughter had unplugged the computer and the phone, so that way the father had no communication abilities and had stopped the father from being able to communicate, like call people and go online, and it was starting to get into financial exploitation, but that she had really created. So I don't know what that would fall under, but it was falling under something bad.
And so that could possibly fall under abuse. So we used to think about unreasonable confinement just as in terms of locking someone in a room. However, now we have to think about it in a much broader sense, because this person was in a home but did not have the ability to communicate with the outside world. So he or she was
forced isolation.
They were confined to some degree. So that could possibly be looked at as abuse if that person was the identified caregiver.
Yeah, okay. So So that's neglect. Is exploitation? So, do we throw that in?
And so exploitation is probably the easiest of all definitions. Oh. It is the simplest.
Oh, because that was the one
I'd have. Yes, simple here. It just means that someone is using your assets for someone other than you.
Oh.
So exploitation can be my funds. You know, you've gotten into my bank account. You know,
my card, my credit card.
It could be my credit cards. It could be you've taken my car, my vehicle, and now you're using. I don't have access to my vehicle. Those are because all those things are assets. It could be that you've transferred my house to your name. That's not something I agreed to.
That is more apparent now.
Right, and
I
it's really important to understand that when we talk about abuse, we talk about the caregiver.
Right.
When we talk about exploitation and neglect, that does not have to be by a caregiver.
It could be a stranger.
And that's where you get into, well, now I'm having all these sort of memory lanes. One of my mom's hospital visits before the pandemic, she was in a shared room, and the person in the other bed was complaining, and rightly so, was trying to bring the police in because her son had stolen her credit card and wanted that being taken care of. And my mom is like chilled out. I'm like, can we get a private room? Like, this is like, there's a lot of drama here.
Yeah.
And my mother was out of, I mean, she was sick. She was out of it. She had medication, but I was sitting next to her bed listening to all of this drama on the other end of the curtain about, he stole my credit card. I want to call the police. Because now that she was in the hospital, there was a lot of people there. I'm like, there's so much drama. This is not a healing space. Wow. And my mother's like, oh, I love this room. I don't mind. And I'm like, are you kidding? It was like a show. But
So that was a form of exploit.
Yes. And so the caveat, let me start with the caveat. The caveat is we have a criteria when we talk about these maltreatments. Mm-hmm. So there are three things that we look at. The first part is the person a disabled adult?
Mm.
And disabled adult has to do with how is that person functionally impaired? What that person can or cannot do for themselves. So you might have two people that have diabetes. One is the diabetic. She goes to work at UNC every day. Mm-hmm. She takes her medication. She drives herself to work. She's a diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? She has a diagnosis of diabetes. The other person has a diagnosis of diabetes, but he's had double amputation. He uses a slide board to get from his wheelchair to his bed. He's had numerous falls. He is not taking his diabetes. His diabetes is 800. He's been in the hospital several times. So we have two people that have the same diagnosis. However, one is probably going to be a disabled adult and one is not. So our first criteria is this person a disabled adult? What can they do or not do for themselves? Then we have to talk about what allegation do we have of maltreatment? What is the current allegation of maltreatment? Is it this abuse? Is it neglect, the self-neglect, caretaker neglect, and last is exploitation. So you must have, what is the disability, what is the maltreatment? And then lastly, is there a current need for protection? Is what is happening, is it happening right now to this adult? If all three pieces of that criteria are met, then that is a screen in case. Okay. If all three pieces are not met, then the case is not screened because you have to meet all three pieces of the criteria for it to be an adult protective services.
The three things, disabled adult.
Abuse, neglect, or exploitation.
Yeah.
And current need for protection.
And
so let me give an example. So let's say Mrs. Jones has been at her house, and she had a fall because the son, he was dancing around and playing with the Xbox. He wasn't paying mom a lot of attention. She had a fall, and she broke her arm. And so it's possible he was neglecting her because he was not paying attention to her, and she had this fall. However, she went to the hospital and the daughter said, hey, I'm coming to get my mom. I'm finished with my brother. Mom is coming to live with me. So we had this adult who might have been disabled. She was disabled. She was confused. She was disabled. She had these numerous falls. The son had neglected her, the allegation. But the daughter came and got her. So there would be no need for protection.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Because someone stepped in.
All right. Okay. I hear you.
Makes sense.
All right. Well, there's so much more I'm going to ask him about because I want to dive into APS and Adult Protective Services, but I feel like I should give you a break for a moment.
This is great or helpful.
Great. All of my words, you know, I'm such like a toxic positivity and I'm like, wonderful, fabulous, great. I'm like, this is such a serious topic.
That. We need that because this topic is it's kind of touching, you know. It touches most of us.
It touches most of us. And
well, people don't think about adults being abused.
Well, I guess in my world I do a lot. And like the fact that it's
in
many
world. Definitely.
And this word willful, because things happen. Things happen all the time. I talk with my clients and colleagues and lots of family members, and it just is what it is. Older adults fall. We all fall. I walked into a wall earlier today. Like people, fall, and it's and then families blame themselves. Right. And sure, sometimes it's willful, and other times it's like, look, this is going to happen. You can't protect. We don't want to restrain people. Like, sure, you don't want someone to fall, then you know. Force them in a wheelchair and restrain them and all these things that we don't want to do are chemically restrained. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of risk we all take, and that's not abuse if someone falls. Mm-hmm. It's that it keeps going back to that willful or that intentional, I would think, harm or neglect.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is why you have to look at all the information. This is just a brief definition. We look at all the information.
I know, because I'm so busy on the other side, like trying to calm caregivers down. Like I know you're exhausted. You're doing mm-hmm. everything you can possibly do. Don't blame yourself. So, Kendall, how do you see this play out with your work at the Department on Aging? Is it that folks? Because I'm going to talk about. I know we'll talk about the Adult Protective Services mm-hmm. route with the Department of Social Services, but how do you see it in your day-to-day?
Yeah, I think the two pieces that come to mind for me and how we see this play out is one kind of, I sometimes think of us as kind of the precursor to Adult Protective Services in that, you know, we have folks who come to the senior centers every day and who know us and interact with us on a regular basis. So sometimes we hear things that folks are kind of in that place of like, you know, is mm-hmm. this okay? Is this not okay? You know, what do I do about it? You know, they unfortunately may not even know that APS is there to support them. Mm-hmm. So they don't really know what the options are. So a lot of times we're helping folks figure out, you know, does this warrant talking with Adult Protective Services? And we always try and err on the side of, you know, let's check and see, because worst case it's not, then they say, no, it doesn't qualify, but here's the other resources. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first piece, is kind of helping folks determine, you know, where they fit into to getting that support. And then I also think about us, and social services does this as well, is some of the prevention work. Mm-hmm. So I know you just started to talk about, you know, caregivers and seeing people who are, you know, really overwhelmed and, you know, just not having the support they need as caregivers. And, you know, a lot of the, in my experience, cases of abuse that I've seen has, you know, often not been someone who says, I'm going to hurt this person. They mm-hmm. are just so overwhelmed that they just, you know, get overwhelmed and snap. Mm-hmm. And not that that makes it okay at all, but if there were supports in place that led up to that, that could have been prevented. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think we try and do, is try and catch things on the earlier side as possible to get folks that support.
I love that. That seems mm-hmm. that's so helpful, and I know, and it's so much of the work that we do. Do you find that it's more the individuals themselves that you see that you're concerned about abuse or neglect, or that it's other people coming to you, caregivers or others coming? Because I've seen that with my own work. It's other people coming to me concerned about the older adult.
Yes.
So who is it, the older adult themselves or is it the other?
It is sometimes the older adult themselves, but I'd say more often it is someone who's friend, neighbor, or friend of a friend who is, you know, I heard my friend tell me about their neighbor and the son's taken their credit card and, you know, she hasn't seen her bank statements and who knows how long. And, you know, this is just a terrible situation that's going on and you need to do something about it.
Yes.
I said, okay, do you know who the person is? Well, no, but I know they live next to my friend and, you know, they don't have a whole lot of information, which is really tricky. So a lot of times we're coaching folks through, you know, how to address the situation with, you know, their friend and how to talk to that neighbor or something like that, and figuring out kind of where to go mm-hmm. from there. And it's very well meeting, but I think a lot of times folks are kind of, you know, someone's got to do something about this, but no, not me. This is not my place. I don't want to get involved.
It's the see something, say something.
Yes.
And so people are seeing something and they're not sure what they're seeing and they're not sure who to say it to, but they're saying something. And we jumped right into the show topic. What we didn't do is a lot of background work, because I know of each of you, and I know Kendall's done it, and we skipped right over that with Kim, but I know you're a social worker mm-hmm. by training. Kim, you're also a social worker mm-hmm. by training, I think?
So I'm not an MSW. I was too lazy to do that. However, I've been a social worker
you're a social worker. I wasn't asking what degrees, but you're both social workers, because when it comes into the coaching and the counseling, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to highlight that that's your approach in your world.
And so our approach at Orange County DSS is listen. Yes. Let people tell their stories. And from their stories, gather the information that's needed to decide how they want us to help them.
Got it.
And let them know the things that are available to them. But I think we have to listen and hear their stories first.
Well, and I know that I've done at least two. I have not done the direct referrals to Adult Protective Services, but people have called me. Mm-hmm. And it was that. Something's happening to my neighbor. They're all alone. There's all these issues going on. I don't know what to do, who can get involved. And then I had, I think it was someone, I think it may have even been her mom. And in both cases, I said, call APS. And then they called me. So I know I've referred, because I'm also like, well, if I hear something, what's my reporting mm-hmm. responsibility? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, go to the professionals and they will screen it and see if next steps. So I want to get into that in a second. But that's, so Kendall, that sounds like the main way people are coming and saying, here's what I'm seeing, what do I do?
Yeah.
Well, how about the fear of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another thing that we're often trying to educate folks on. I'm sure Kim does as well every day. Is unfortunately, the way social work in general, and particularly Adult Protective Services, are portrayed in the media is similarly to how Child Protective Services mm-hmm. are portrayed, is that it's these, you know, these really important government people who are going to come in mm-hmm. and they're going to fix everything. They're going to take this person mm-hmm. and put them in a safe place.
Yeah, they're going to take them away.
And I often tell people that for better or worse, there's not a lot of safe places that we could just pick someone up and take them to. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not foster homes that are just on call for older adults. It takes a process mm-hmm. to move folks.
Wow, that's
an extra interesting idea.
Does that not exist because of the...
it's a hospital. It's the foster.
Yes.
Actually, that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's something. Why doesn't it exist?
Probably funding.
Yeah. Mm. Yes.
You know, everything is...
I have my mouth open, like I'm just sort of looking.
You hit that on the buzz. Why isn't there a place to protect people who are being abused outside of a hospital or
you know,
a nursing
Alicia,
home?
Here's something for you to create. Because years ago, I was a foster parent, and so I never thought about that. I think I just hadn't thought about it with that model. Mm-hmm. I think when people, right, there's the hospital. But I hadn't thought, wouldn't that be interesting? Just like there's a whole group, but there's not enough foster parents as mm-hmm. it is. But wouldn't that be interesting
to have,
if there were foster homes for older
adults?
Because we were an emergency placement. Like they would call mm-hmm. us from the hospital or the police station or the mm-hmm. courthouse and said, hey, would you, oh yeah, don't. She's like looking at me like, oh, you're so wonderful. No, it's actually the easy is the wrong word. It's an easy, because I did short-term foster placement.
Oh, okay.
We did emergency response. So I'm awesome.
That?
Give me. I will take someone's kid for a day to 2 weeks and spoil them and give them ice cream. But the kids were fine. It's that they were in unsafe places.
Right.
And they're like, we need, and I, you know, we need a safe space for the kids for a few days while mm-hmm. this gets sorted out. But that'd
what
be cool
about for adults?
But I think, so let me back up a little bit. But guess what? Most adults don't have to be removed from their homes.
Yes.
How do we?
Good point.
Most adults don't want to be removed from their homes.
Well, that's it.
How
that's
do
why
we,
they don't want to be reported. That's people don't want to report falls for that reason.
But,
they're going to make me
but
move.
How do we work with the adult, mm-hmm. with the family, come up with a plan that's going to keep the adult safe?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about. Protection is all about keeping this person
educating
safe.
Educating.
But it's all about first do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
It is really important that oftentimes you have to think, a mom has dementia.
Mm-hmm.
A mom has been really violent lately. Mm-hmm. She's been smacking the caregiver upside the head.
Yep.
The caregiver got upset and pushed her, and one of the witnesses, the neighbors saw that and called Adult Protective Services. So, mom adores her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even remember that the daughter had pushed her. So how do we put services into place? How do we put education into place? How do we put those supports
for safety
so that this doesn't happen mm-hmm. again?
Oh, my
so I think we have to think about it that way.
Well, and you, not to get bigger issues, well, there's so many big issues here, but this idea of risk and safety, and mm-hmm. I remember this study or whatever, this common years ago, when you ask adult children, what do they want for their parents? So people like me, people in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s for their parents in their 70s, 80s, 90s. If you ask me, what do we want? You know, we want safety. And when you ask the older adult themselves, they want independence.
Mm-hmm.
They want control. And there is this, and I had this conversation the other day, if people are still mentally competent. People are allowed to make their own decisions. People are allowed to make, you know, to take risks. And so this issue of safety, it's like, under whose determination is safety? Because lots of folks, you know, just walking around, even with their walker, they may fall. But that's important. So anyway, I got into a bigger issue of risk and safety, and that, you know, immediate harm to themselves or others, as opposed to, like, they're allowed to decide if they want to go upstairs or
And even when we talk about APS, we talk about conducting this assessment, this evaluation. We conduct a comprehensive evaluation. We gather information. We talk to collaterals, doctors, neighbors, police, to make sure we're doing, getting an accurate account of the individual and what that person looks like, okay?
Yes.
And then we come down to our case decision. Did these things happen, and what do they warrant? But then we come down to, if it did happen, does this person have the ability to say, I want some help, I don't want some help? And we have to understand, people who have the capability, the capacity to consent or refuse, the law gives them that right.
Because of their independence.
Well, and you I have this list of questions, and I told you, and you're hitting on some of the questions, because one of my questions was, what do investigations look like? Okay. So, or maybe we take a step back, because going to now the DSS, so someone calls the Department
of Social Services.
Yeah, Department of Social Services. It goes to the Adult Protective Services.
So, first of all.
Yeah, we'll start from there. Start from a phone call and take us through the process of then the investigation.
So we assess and evaluate. So we're not investigating the incident.
Yeah.
We are trying to assess if this person is a disabled adult, if there's maltreatment. Yes, and if there's a need for protection. So typically a call comes into our DSS line. It goes to the social worker on call, and the same thing happens on evenings and weekends, except it goes in through 911. A social worker takes a comprehensive report. It is about a 9-page report, and it asks for identifying information. But then we have to ask for information about, tell me why you're calling. What is it that made you call today? We let the person tell their story. I call because I saw my next door neighbor. She was wandering down the street. She seemed to be very confused. She seemed to be disheveled. Her hair appeared to be matted to her head. When I tried to direct her to her back to her house, she said, no, I don't live on the street.
Okay.
Then we try to gather other information. Do you know other people who have information about this adult? We gather all the information, and then we have to make a screening decision. The screening decision goes back to the criteria. Is there enough information to say this person is a disabled adult? Is there enough information that there's maltreatment? And is there enough information to say there is a need for protection? If all three pieces are met, this case is screened in. And a social worker is assigned. And that social worker has to see that person between an immediate time frame or no more than 72 hours.
Got it.
The social worker does a comprehensive evaluation. And based on all the information gathered by collateral contacts, family members, interviewing the adult is the first thing that happens. It's face-to-face. We make a case decision. We determine, once again, those three criteria. If the three pieces of criteria are met, then that case is substantiated and confirmed, okay?
And so I was using the word investigation, but really the right term is evaluation.
Evaluate and assess.
So the decision tree is they get you a call, you get screened. If you meet the things, then you go into this intensive evaluation process. Okay, and then go on. So now
if the case has been screened in, we've determined, we determined that all three pieces are met. This person is a disabled adult. This maltreatment has happened, and there is a need for protection. Then we have to look at, hey, this person needs some services based on what is happening. Does this person have the capacity to consent or to refuse our services? If he or she has, if an individual has the capacity, that person can say, yeah, my son's been taking my money, but I love him so much.
I love him. Yeah, I don't want to report him.
And it's okay. It's my money. I have plenty. And I'm not going to agree to services. And if that person understands the consequences of that choice and the outcomes, then we have to walk away.
And let it go.
But there are pieces that we still are mandated to send over to law enforcement that might want a law enforcement investigation, because they investigate. But if that person has the capacity, We can offer them services.
So even if you've, I like the big word substantiate. So even if you've substantiated the concerns, it's different than law enforcement because the person themselves, like how people always say, oh, the person presses charges. And then I heard once, actually, no, it's law enforcement that decides if a crime was committed. Yes. Yes. In this case, they can consent or refuse. So they can decide whether
they
want to.
If they have capacity.
If they, yes, that's if a big person, old capital
yes,
I, capital
F. If a person
F.
does not have capacity, we're able to document that based on medical records, our assessment, our evaluation information, then we have to go and get a court order and ask a judge to give us the authority to make decisions on that person's behalf.
Got it. And then what? So the person says, yes, I consent to getting involved. And like, then what do you do? Is it restraining orders? Is it like, what happens then?
So each case is very different. It is based on the identified maltreatment. What does this person need to keep them safe? What does this person need to keep this from reoccurring again? So you might have a person who they've gotten some skin breakdown because they were not being toileted. Mm-hmm. They were wearing incontinent briefs and they were not being changed appropriately. Mm-hmm. So she's like, yes, I'm here and my daughter works and she comes home during lunch and she tries to change me. So we might have to put some in-home services
I was going
to
say, then what? And do you have, this is going to get into a, because I was going to say, what if someone's not safe at home? Do you have the money to bring someone in to be, or do you have to actually say we need to remove her from the home?
So there are cases where we put in-home aid in, or we get people on our community alternatives program if that person has Medicaid, the nursing home level of care. There are other times when we say, let's look at your social support. Let's look at who you have in your support system that can help you out. You go to Da-da-da Church.
I was going to say the churches.
Yes, the churches are one.
Okay.
They have a support group that helps seniors. They come and check on folks at noon. Mm-hmm. Are they willing to do that? So we try to use all those informal supports to meet that person's needs.
This is so intense, and it's getting into lots of issues. I hear a microphone. So weird. Maybe
was that me?
Oh, was that you? Are you playing with the microphone?
I don't know if I was tapping. I might have been tapping.
We're so into it. Yeah. Oh, gosh, no. So it gets into then funding, and are there even the resources to provide some of these services? That's a whole other show.
There you go, Kendall.
Kendall?
Pet peeve. So Adult Protective Services, along with many services that we provide, they're called unfunded mandates.
Yes.
So we're required by statute
I'm
by these services.
I'm spending so long with all the Medicaid changes. Let's be a little advocacy. Unfunded. Like there's a lot of unfunded mandates, which means they mandate something, but they don't give money.
Yes.
There's the basic.
So we have to be creative. But the one thing I can say is we have great community partners that we can often reach out to, and we can brainstorm together and say, hey, we have a little lady. She has memory impairment. She has some cognitive issues. Do you have an adult day slot so she's not left the home at home all day? Because if her daughter's going to work, she goes to adult day health, she can get changed, she can get fed, she can get her medications. She can also have that social interaction. So, hey, problem solved.
Problem solved, and you know those resources. And I realize I don't think we've done a show on adult day, and we've got at least two great programs there yet.
We
got to do that.
Awesome programs, yes.
And so because you know about the resources, and also do you have connections to help? Sometimes these places have waiting lists. And so do you have connections to say, hey, we need to, as people used to say, jump the line, but because we have an emergency situation. And so let's really fit this person in ASAP.
So it depends. So sometimes, depending on the funding source that Adult Day Health has, there's certain regulations that talk about if it's an adult protective services case, that individual gets preference.
That's the word I was looking at. Preference is nicer than jump the list, but prioritize. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So then, Kendall, I was going to say, when, in terms of what people should do, and I think we address it, but I want to make sure we've truly addressed this question. If any of our listeners, and they've seen something, what should they do? Should they call the Department on Aging, or should they go right to
911?
Oh, that's a good question. Who do they call? Thank you, Alicia. Do they call 911? Do they call the Department on Aging? Do they call the Department of Social Services? What do they do?
Yeah, I usually say that Adult Protective Services and our two social services staff that work with us, the Department on Aging, say this to me all the time, is if you're not sure, just have us go through and take the report. It will take some time, but then you know whether or not it screens in or not. The times where I say call 911 is if you see immediate harm being done. If it is happening right in front of you, then we want obviously someone there immediately. And then I know law enforcement does a lot of adult protective services reports, so then they walk through that process.
Interesting. And I do think, because I don't want to run out of time, can we give the telephone number and the website for adult protective services or any of the contact numbers so that way we have that?
Okay. So our main office number is 919-245-2800. That is the number that is called 9 to 5, Monday through Fridays. 8 to 5, I'm sorry, Monday through Fridays. And you ask for the adult services social worker on call. Now, for evenings, weekends, and holidays, you call 911, and they will contact the social worker on call, and the social worker on call will reach back out to the reporter.
So I'm already having this vision of, you know, sometimes when you see serious topics on shows, and at the beginning and the end of the show, and it says, if you need something or you suspect something, when we put this up on the website, I'm going to do that. I'm going to say, if you suspect yourself or others are experiencing, please call, and I'll make sure to put this information on there.
And say, because you are a mandatory reporter.
Yes.
Okay, well, that goes a lot.
Everyone is a mandatory reporter.
I did not know that. So, listeners, that's a really technical term. Like, mandatory reporters are, you know, that's professionals.
Samaritan, like, right?
Everyone in North Carolina, under the general statute, is a mandatory reporter.
If we see something, say something.
If you suspect that a disabled adult is being abused, neglected, or exploited, you are mandatory. Yes.
Okay, back in the day, Kim, we were talking a lot about language, and we weren't saying disabled adult, we're saying adult with disability, but have they gone back? Is the statute still disabled adult?
The statute has not been changed. They've talked about, even looking at the terminology, self-neglect, they've talked about that, but it, I always say government works takes a while.
Got it. Okay. that's what I will add. If you suspect that a disabled adult is being abused,
did you put in there that it is mandatory?
I'm not sure if I'll put that on the website. I think that might be confusing, I'll put that. If you suspect,
please call
that yourself or others, I'll put this number or call 911. It's kind of like when you call the doctor's office, the first thing they say is, if you're having a medical emergency, call 911, and if not, for an appointment, call. All right. I want to make sure we have just shy of 10 minutes, and so I want to make sure that we are addressing all the things that we want to make sure we're addressing. So you've given a few case examples. Are there other, like, typical questions or concerns or cases that you want to make sure that people know about or are thinking about?
I think one that we've seen more often recently is this idea of self-neglect that we've kind of touched on a little bit, but it's kind of...
Oh, that's the big one that I get, because that's this person is struggling at home with cognitive changes that may be. So, all right, Lee, dive in, self-neglect.
Well, I think it's a case where, you know, it's helpful to have that professional support to kind of walk through, is this self-neglect or not? Because, again, it comes back to that idea that people, if they are adults who have the cognitive capacity, they are allowed to make whatever decisions they want, even if they are decisions that you don't agree with, even if they are decisions that take risks or put themselves in potential harm. But they're allowed to do that. And
what I heard was showering. I was listening to a physician, a doctor, saying, you know, like, I think, like, the base, one of the goals is really, like, once a week. But a lot of folks freak out if it's not, what do you mean they're not taking a shower every day or every other day or every 3 days? But so it's kind of like it might not be our goal of how much we would, but they're comfortable with, you know, so.
But even showering, many people did not grow up showering, so they're taking a bird bath.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Right.
Okay, so other things. Sorry, I interrupted. So,
I think the self-neglect. The self-neglect is one piece. I think you started the show with talking about scams. I think that's one we see a lot more and more.
I got scammed, and recently I fell for it, and I know about this stuff, and I gave up my credit card information.
I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, I know they're looking at me. Never let my level of idiocy surprise you. And listeners, don't multitask. Don't be on a meeting on a Zoom and then respond to a text that your credit card is needed for tolls.
No, never.
Okay.
I've heard a lot about that
one. That's a biggie.
Well, and I think there's always been this kind of idea that, if someone starts falling for scams, then that's a sign that they have some type of cognitive change and they need to get some support. everyone's falling for them. Right. They're getting so tricky now.
Well, yeah. My husband, it was like 3 times in a month, and I started blinking my eyes real fast, like, what's going on here? Because you've gotten scammed 3 times.
Yeah, it's,
well, almost.
They've gotten really good at
it. Good, good.
This issue of self-neglect, to me, also goes into, is it a cognitive issue, but also isn't self-neglect, and I know from my own circle of love mm-hmm. people, it's also a sign of depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when folks just can't get out of bed and clean themselves and could just go to things. They're just super depressed. So that's
and isolation and
yeah. So
depressed.
You're so people are coming to you around that. Like, I'm worried because so and so is just not doing X, Y, Z.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that comes up a lot, and I think it then has to lead into that conversation about capacity, and that's a really hard determination that I know APS wrestles with constantly, of where that line is of. Mm-hmm. Capacity, and I really don't love that term of capacity. Mm-hmm. It's really just a legal,
well, then
a legal
competency,
word.
Decision making capacity, competency,
and competency is. So DSS has the ability to determine capacity. Competency is determined by the clerk of court in a very formal proceeding.
Oh, thank you. Because, yeah, I do some work in the guardianship world or people. And so a judge determines competency.
The clerk of court, yes.
The clerk of court, but capacity, all these C words. Okay.
Yeah.
there was just another question I was going to ask. Okay. So just making sure that we've addressed all of the issues that I want to make sure you wanted to address about the see something, say something about yourself or others. Mm-hmm. Are there other issues that you're like, hey, I want to make sure I say this about, especially as we're getting World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, which is how weird. It's Sunday, which is also Father's Day. And so other things.
I do want to say, oftentimes we concentrate on adult protective services. We provide an array of programs that are preventive programs. We have a community alternatives program for disabled adults, which is a Medicaid-based program which helps individuals enter their health situations remaining in their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not having to go into placement. They have an aide that comes in and does, if they qualify for Medicaid, at a nursing level of care. We also provide placement services for folks who want to be placed. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we have our adult day health centers. We have an adult day care. Our agency has had some funding for those to help individuals. We have our in-home aid program. That's always a program that oftentimes there's an inquiry list or a waiting list because it's such a popular program, but it allows folks to stay at home. But also, people just calling to talk about other services that might be those services that we might not have but our community partners might have.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help get people connected with our Alliance Mental Health? If you're having, you know, concerns about your mental health, then of course we're not the entity, but we can sort of help you get connected with the right folks. So we provide that sort of the outreach.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes APS cases get screened out, but social worker will still go out and see that person.
So they'll still get services, they just get put into a different group, which just made me think that little piece you just shared was an appetizer. That's the next show we're going to do together, is really a deep dive into the Orange County Department of Social Services.
And
like the fullness
offer.
Of the offerings. Because we're
the
just
partners,
doing
the outreach, the things that people don't know about.
Yeah, we're so doing that. Okay, so Kim, there's your second show.
Yeah.
Kendall, you may come on, especially, or you have two. I love this about.
Yes,
this
is a wonderful brainchild of Janice Tyler about 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, by the way, almost 20 years ago, I was part of conversations with the previous directors, Jerry Passmore. At the Department on Aging and DSS. So I heard about this dream for years before it happened, but I'm sorry, I stole the thunder.
No.
Keep going.
They saw that, you know, unfortunately, there was some stigma around going to social services, and also just things like the transportation barrier and the logistics of getting there and waiting in the waiting room. And so we wanted to have this closer relationship with social services. So we now have two social services staff that are placed, one at each of our senior centers, so that if folks to apply for any of these wonderful services, food and nutrition benefits, Medicaid, in-home services, all these different things that social services offers, they can do it at one of our senior senior centers where they're already there doing classes and taking exercise programs and all those things. They're already there to make it a little bit easier on them.
So that's going to be the show. And I love our new bougie studio because we have extra microphones because that's going to be a show. Kendall, it may not be you then. It may be the two.
We'll send Keisha and Christy.
Keisha and Christy. Oh, oh my gosh. It's going to be Keisha, Christy, and Kim. We're going to have you all come back and just really do a deep dive into all the different services because I think it's one of the things we're so, I want to say, blessed with
we're
here in Orange County.
We're proud of that.
We have
because
so
I've
many
heard
great services.
About other counties, and I'll say, don't you have, you know, we have some good stuff going on here that we offer.
Yes, we do.
All right, so you each get 1 minute, and I will give you a lead-in question, or you can use your minute however you want, which is, I know this has been an intense topic. I use this with some of the guests. To try to end a little more positively, what gives you each hope for the future? Who's ready to answer that when it comes to this topic or these issues? What gives you hope?
I guess I would say I think I love seeing the families that we work with and seeing the support that does rally around folks when they need it. I think a lot of times folks come and they think that they are, you know, solo agers and they're aging on their own, but the networks that people create with their families and their neighbors and their faith communities, I think we're starting to have to shift back to that, you know, kind of primitive way of being of everyone kind of in their village taking care of each other. Yes.
I love that. Thank you.
Like that.
Kim, your minute.
So I love seeing, I think, Orange County think outside the box and figuring out we don't all have to cross the road the same way. And this willingness to serve the folks that come before us and serve them with dignity and respect. And understand that in any given day, that could be any one of us. And that makes me so proud to be a part of Orange County because I think the folks that are here care about people, care about their income, their outcomes, and their successes, and really work hard to understand that successes are defined differently. And how do we help those folks get there?
Thank you. I love that. And I know I've said it before, and I don't want to sound cliche or cheesy about it, but what gives me hope are the two of you and the teams that you work with and the fact that you're part of this whole multidisciplinary group of colleagues and professionals that come together to make sure that, as we say, Orange County is a great place to live and a great place to age, to be an older adult and to age well together. And so, I didn't even realize that was our name of our show.
There you go. No pun intended.
So I cannot thank you enough. Kendall McMillan from the Orange County Department on Aging and Kim Lassiter-Fisher from the Orange County Department of Social Services, thank you so much. To our listeners, thank you so much. And, of course, as always, to WCOM for helping us use or WCOM-LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for letting us use this wonderful studio for our Aging Well Together show. And Kendall's home base, the Orange County Department on Aging, for sponsoring our show. So listeners, we will be back next week, and thank you so much.